Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 6, text number 9. Because there are a lot of verses without purports. And, okay, so we'll read the English starting text number 9, and then we'll do the Sanskrit for text 26, because that's the first purport that verse that has a purport. Actually, this whole storyline here. I'll start on text number 4. The son of Manu was Ikshvaku. When Manu was sneezing, does anyone remember what happened? When Manu was sneezing? Yes, Ikshvaku was born from Manu's nostrils. So you never know what's going to happen when you sneeze, right? King Ikshvaku had 100 sons, of whom Vikukshi, Nimi, and Dandaka were the most prominent. Of the 100 sons, 25 became kings in the western side of Aryavarta, a place between the Himalaya and Vindhya mountains. Another 25 sons became kings in the east of Aryavarta, and the three principal sons became kings in the middle. The other sons became kings in various other places. During the months of January, February, and March, oblations offered to the forefathers are called Ashtaka Shraddha. The Shraddha ceremony is held during the dark fortnight of the month. When Maharaj Ikshvaku was performing his oblations in the ceremony, he ordered his son Vikukshi to go immediately to the forest to bring some pure flesh. Thereafter, Ikshvaku's son Vikukshi went to the forest and killed many animals suitable for being offered to as oblations. When fatigued and hungry, he became forgetful, and he ate a rabbit that he had killed. Vikukshi offered the remnants of the flesh to King Ikshvaku, who gave it to Vasishta for purification. But Vasishta could immediately understand that part of the flesh had already been taken by Vikukshi, and therefore he said that it was unfit to be used in the Shraddha ceremony. When King Ikshvaku, thus informed by Vasishta, understood what his son Vikukshi had done, he was extremely angry. Thus he ordered Vikukshi to leave the country because Vikukshi violated the regulative principles. Having been instructed by the great and learned Brahmin, Vasishta, who discoursed about the absolute truth, Maharaj Ikshvaku became renounced. By following the principles for a yogi, he certainly achieved the supreme perfection after giving up his material body. So Prabhupada explains that for the transmission of transcendental knowledge to take place, the speaker has to be bona fide and the hearer also has to be bona fide. In other words, the speaker has to be practicing and speaking the truth, and the follower or the hearer needs to be receptive to that truth without having a challenging mood. So apparently that's what took place here. Just by hearing the discourse of the absolute truth, Maharaj Ikshvaku became renounced. We can imagine how inspired he became just to give up everything. This has also happened on many occasions in relationship to devotees reading Prabhupada's books or having met Srila Prabhupada. Immediately, they became so inspired that they decide to give up their materialistic lifestyle and begin following the principles of spiritual life. So when the right combination is there, then that's what happens. Very powerful transformation can take place by the sincerity of a devotee and by Krishna's mercy. And that happens to us also sometimes, right? If you're sincere and you're following nicely, sometimes when you hear something that you read from one of Prabhupada's books or in a class, then it immediately strikes your heart and you become transformed. So this is, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, there's nothing as so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. It's the mature fruit of all mysticism. So there's a difference between theoretical knowledge and realized knowledge. So Krishna is describing realized knowledge in this verse. And so when we have some realization of the truth, there's nothing more inspiring than that. So this is what happened in this situation with Maharaj Ikshvaku. He immediately became renounced upon hearing about the absolute truth from Vasishta. After his father's disappearance, Bhikkhukshi returned to the country and thus became the king, ruling the planet Earth and performing various sacrifices to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhikkhukshi later became celebrated as Sashada. So this is the same Bhikkhukshi who ate the flesh, right? It was, because he would describe it as an accidental fall down. He just became overwhelmed. But obviously here he became rectified and assumed the throne. He ruled the entire planet Earth. The son of Shashada was Paranjaya. If anyone would like to make a family tree of this, I'm sure it would have some use. So many family trees, we could have thousands of branches and leaves on these trees. I've seen a couple of them somewhere. Some devotees are really expert at that, who came from who, which dynasty. And oh, really? Oh, that's where I saw it. Where is that? What page? Oh, yeah, there it is. Oh, that's interesting. Whew. Would anyone like to memorize any of these genealogical tables? Yeah. Of course, up to a certain point, they don't have the ultimate source. Oh, this is amazing. So there's the descendants of Vaivashvatamanu. And there's another table, the Sun Dynasty from Amsuman up to Kusha. And there's the Sun Dynasty from Kusha up to Ridbala. And it just keeps going on and on and on. So many different dynasties. Dynasty of the moon god Soma. Vishnu is the first in that one. Then comes Brahma. So these are all great souls that deserve mention. The Srimad Bhagavatam, that's why they're there. And so there it is. Cassandra, you have some interest. So Vikukshi became the ruler of the earth. He became known as Shashada. The son of Shashada was Paranjaya, who was also known as Indravaha, and sometimes as Kakushta. Please hear from me. Please hear from me how he received different names for different activities. So that's why different names are there, right? If you have certain qualities that people like to think about and recognize, or if you have certain characteristics, or if you perform certain activities, right? It's like one of my nicknames used to be Curly. You would never know it. There's a tire shop in Argentina called the El Gordo y El Flaco. The fat one and the skinny one. So I'm sure your parents have special names for you. Your parents have special names for you. Sometimes? Do they call you by something other than your real name? What? What? Hmm? What? Who? What do they call you? Hmm? Oh, that's a nice name. Why do they call you Arjuna? Is that your name? So you have qualities like Arjuna, probably. That's why they call you Arjuna, right? Okay. Interesting. So these are transcendental names. That's the difference between my birth and yours. Okay. So formerly, there was a devastating war between the demigods and the demons. One of many, I'm sure. The demigods, having been defeated, accepted Paranjaya as their assistant and then conquered the demons. Therefore, this hero is known as Paranjaya. He who conquered the residence of the demons. Paranjaya agreed to kill all the demons on the condition that Indra would be his carrier. Because of pride, Indra could not accept this proposal. But later, by the order of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Indra did accept it and became a great bull carrier for Paranjaya. So Paranjaya, he agreed to kill the demons. What was the condition? Anyone remember? Yeah, that Indra would be his carrier. So, was Indra fired up? Was he enthusiastic to do that? No. Why? Because he was too proud, he was too puffed up. Can anyone think of an example of someone who wasn't too puffed up to serve an inferior or someone who's junior? Krishna, right? What did he do? Right, he drove Arjuna's chariot. That's how he appears in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam for the first time. He also, didn't he wash the feet of all the devotees in the Rajasuya sacrifice? Krishna loves to serve his devotees. So any chance we get to do some service, especially for the devotees, we should take advantage of that opportunity because it's being given to us by Krishna. Very special to be able to serve the devotees. And Krishna setting the example doesn't mean matter who's higher or lower. We get the opportunity to serve. Then there's an exchange of love. And that's what sustains us. That's what we relish more than anything else. And all the pleasures that we look for in this material world, they're just perverted reflections of this loving feeling that we're looking for with Krishna and his devotees. So we should not be fooled by the allurement of Maya who's trying to take us away from that. So Indra was fooled. Indra was fooled. He didn't want to render service because he was more interested in his position as being superior and being controller than entering into a mood of loving service. He was satisfied by this perverted conception and taking some gratification in feeling superior. He missed a great opportunity, but along came Vishnu and he gave him the order. So he became a great bull carrier for Paranjaya. So what happens after that? Well, protected by armor and desiring to fight, Paranjaya took up a transcendental bow, very sharp arrows. So he's riding on Indra, took the form of a bull. He's got his bow and his arrows. And what is he trying to do? What is he going to do with his bow and arrows? Anybody remember? Kill all the demons. So while being highly praised by the demigods, so all the demigods were watching. Like they sort of hover in the air somewhere where they can see everything going on. And somehow they always have access to flowers in case their team wins. So they're cheering on Paranjaya, who's riding on Indra with his bow and arrows. So what part of the bull did he sit on? Sat on the hump of the bull. We get a better view. So he got up on the back of the bull, which is Indra, and sat on its hump. I wonder how Indra was feeling at this time. Probably very humiliated. Thus he is known as Kakushta, being empowered by Lord Vishnu, who is the super soul and the supreme person. Paranjaya sat on the great bull and is therefore known as Indravaha. Surrounded by the demigods, he attacked the residents of the demons in the west. There was a fierce battle between the demons and Paranjaya. Indeed, it was so fierce that when one hears about it, one's hairs stand on end. Anyone's hairs standing on end? Okay, we're not hearing attentively enough, so we have to really concentrate. When he hears about the battle, one's hairs stand on end. All the demons bold enough to come before Paranjaya were immediately sent to the residence of, who knows, Yamaraj by Paranjaya's arrows. to save themselves from the blazing arrows of Indravaha, which resembled the flames of devastation at the end of the millennium. The demons, who remained when the rest of their army was killed, fled very quickly to their respective homes. After conquering the enemy, the saintly King Paranjaya gave everything, including the enemy's riches and wives, to Indra, who carries a thunderbolt. For this, he is celebrated as Paranjaya. Thus, Paranjaya is known by different names because of his different activities. So, Indra, because he surrendered, because he did the service, he received so many riches and wives. So it pays on every level to do what Krishna wants. The son of Paranjaya was known as Anena. Anena's son was Prithu, and Prithu's son was Vishvagandhi. Vishvagandhi's son was Chandra, and Chandra's son was Yuvanashva. Son of Yuvanashva was Shravasta, who constructed a township known as Shravastipuri. Son of Shravasta was Brihadvasa, and his son was Kuvalyashva. In this way, the dynasty increased. To satisfy the sage Uttanka, the greatly powerful Kuvalyashva killed a demon named Dundu. He did this with the assistance of his 21,000 sons. Amaraj Brigit. For this reason, Kuvalyashva is celebrated as Dundumara, the killer of Dundu. All but three of his sons, however, were burned to ashes by the fire emanating from Dundu's mouth. You going to Cucamonga's? Going up? Oh, okay, I'll see you there. All right, Paul. We have a nickname for Cucamonga now also. I'm talking about nicknames before. I don't know if I should say that. Should I say it? Okay, we thought of it last night. Cook, I'm hungry. Because she's always cooking for the devotees. So, whenever devotees see her, they think of her cooking. So, inside, they're thinking, cook, I'm hungry. Okay. I don't think she'll mind if I reveal that. It's an endearing nickname, isn't it? Don't say it, don't say it. Okay. Amaraj Brigit. For this reason, Kuvalyashva is celebrated as Dundumara. We read that. The remaining sons were Dridashva, Kapilashva, and Bhadrashva. From Dridashva came a son named Haryashva, whose son is celebrated as Nikumba. The son of Nikumba was Bahulashva. The son of Bahulashva was Krishashva. The son of Krishashva was Sanajit. The son of Sanajit was Yuvanashva. Yuvanashva had no sons, and thus he retired from family life and went to the forest. Here's a verse for today. No, not yet. Yes. Okay. I'm all out of speaking power, especially for chanting the verse. Are you ready, Prabhu? Prajapati Prabhu, can you chant the verse? Just go through it once. I don't think we should repeat it because we're out of time.
Arya Satena Nirvina.
Arya Satena Nirvina.
Rishayosya Kapa Glava.
We're reading. Yuvanashva went into the forest with his 100 wives. All of them were very morose. So Yuvanashva, he had no son, so he decided to take Vanaprast and go into the forest, and all of his wives, they followed him to the forest, and everyone was very morose. The sages in the forest, however, being very kind to the king, began very carefully and attentively performing an Indra Yajna so that the king might have a son. Okay. Prabhupada's purport. One may enter the Vanaprastha order of life with his wife, but the Vanaprastha order means complete retirement from household life. Although King Yuvanashva retired from family life, he and his wives were always morose because he had no son. So Prabhupada is explaining here what real Vanaprastha life is. Saying one may enter the Vanaprastha order of life with his wife, but the Vanaprastha order means complete retirement from household life. In other words, let's explain it. One can take Vanaprast and either travel without one's wife, the husband and wife can separate, or they can remain together, but one has to be retired from household life. In other words, not be preoccupied with making money, no sex life, none of the of course, whatever comforts are necessary, but not the attitude or the desire to increase one's comforts. Just like, what is it? I'm sorry. Janasya Moham. What is that for? Pamsams. Striya Mituni Bhava Mitam. How does that go? Well, the whole idea is it all starts from the attraction of the man and the woman. And then from that comes the house, the land, the relatives, and all these things. As a result, the children and the empire expands and expands. So the whole idea of Vanaprastha life is to reduce as much as necessary, not think in terms of expanding materially, acquiring materially. And because Vana refers to forest, right? So, in Kali Yuga, in the mission of Lord Chaitanya, we don't, the Vanaprasthas don't go to the forest. We're not Bhajananandis. We're Ghostyananandis. We don't concentrate just on our own purification and our own bhajan. We are preachers, Gostian. So, in our movement of Lord Chaitanya, Vanaprast doesn't go to the forest. Vanaprast helps the preaching mission with the extra time that one has. Because one is retired from household life, one dedicates that time to the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya, either with one's wife or without one's wife. Usually, in our movement, there's a, that's okay. I'm all right. Because our movement has been around for some time, there more and more devotees are entering into Vanaprastha life, which is natural. Okay. In one sense, it's natural because the time is there. One has reached the age. At the same time, because many great hastas were not trained first as brahmacharyas or brahmacharinis, or the women weren't raised in a Vedic way, which means that they're protected by the father and the family till they get married, etc. Then they're protected by the husband. In many cases, in most cases in our movement, the women weren't protected by the family, so they had to leave the family and move into the temple, where the protection is there. So you have brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. In the past, there weren't brahmacharinis, not because there was no interest in their spiritual life, but because there was a way for them to enter into spiritual life, a way which is much more practical and efficient. They would get married when they're young, very young. So everything was different then. And Prabhupada so expertly adapted the pranashram system to the modern day. And Prabhupada was very flexible, just like, although the instruction is there, you take vanaprast. And then you take sannyas. After the family is grown up, the children are grown up, so you're about 50 years old, so then vanaprast and then sannyas. But it's not that, well, I'm 50, so I have to take vanaprast. If we're not ready, we shouldn't enter into another order of life, because then it would be artificial and we won't be able to maintain. So Prabhupada is giving a but here. Yes, one may enter the vanaprastha order of life with his wife, but what does it mean? It means complete retirement from household life. So we have to be ready. If we're not ready, those desires are still there. And many aren't ready, many won't be ready for. It all depends on the individual. Because of our upbringings, we didn't have a Vedic upbringing. Grihasthas weren't trained as the men weren't trained as brahmacharis from age 5. For the most part, the proper samskaras weren't there at conception. So not very much training as brahmachari. The women had not much training in terms of what it means to be a woman. Men don't know what it means to be a man. So, and because the society is the way it is, and our upbringing was the way it was, and our conditioning, many marriages are dysfunctional, what to speak of getting to the point where you're 50 years old and ready to take vanaprast. Many families don't stay together that long. Many marriages don't even last that long. So we really have to judge our situation according to time, place, and circumstance, and not just read something. Prabhupada says, okay, Vanaprast. Because then what happens? And Prabhupada mentions this elsewhere. Then the men start looking around. They take Vanaprast, but then what do? They're not looking for Krishna after a while. They start looking for another wife. Well, this is my midlife crisis. So I really think I should... whatever. So then, so these things happen. So we really have to be ready for we're going to take this step. We really have to be ready, and we should try to be ready. Not that well, just see what happens. Being ready, of course, means strict sadhana and either preaching or preparing ourselves for preaching, bring ourselves up so that we can preach. Because this is in Kali Yuga, it's not going to the forest that's gonna purify us. It's the preaching, that's the essence of Lord Chaitanya's movement. That's how we become purified. Lord Chaitanya is the is Krishna in his munificent aspect. When Krishna wants to give the mercy, he comes as Lord Chaitanya. And when we want to become purified, we follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya by also giving the mercy. So that's how we become purified. That's how we become connected and remain connected. By getting the mercy and giving it, tasting and distributing. That's what Lord Chaitanya did. Tasted like anything, distributed like anything. And he asked us to help him distribute. He said, so many fruits, I can't distribute them by myself. Please help. So that's what it means to be a brahmachari, really, in Kali Yuga. That's what it means to be a brahmacharini. That's what it means to be a grihasta. And especially when one has the time. If one hasn't had much time in grihasta life, varnaprastha life means now I have time. Now I have the time. And as Srila Gurudev always used to say, that the Vanaprastha is going to be the next wave of Shakti in the Hare Krishna movement. And we're seeing this. Devotees maturing very nicely in Krishna consciousness. When they take Vanaprastha, they accept so much responsibility in spiritual life. And one example in Argentina now, we have 5 or 6 women that are living in the temple that are Vanaprastha. Their children are grown up. They're either divorced or their husbands gave permission for them to dedicate themselves fully. And so they're living in the temple. And they're already settled. They're not looking around for anything else. They're not looking to get married. They're not looking to increase their material opulences. Their minds are peaceful. And they're fully dedicating themselves to service, which is wonderful. It's a wonderful boon. So this will undoubtedly be happening more and more in different parts of the movement. And men are taking Vanaprastha and traveling and preaching, and women also. And men are preparing for sannyas, and some have taken sannyas. It's very, very glorious to see a devotee go through the system and become purified through the system of Varnashram Dharma. Daivi Varnashram Dharma. There's one devotee in temple president in Hartford, who has grown-up children now. He said he was just praising the Grihastha Ashram. He said, I don't know exactly how it works, but it worked for me. It worked. I've become a lot more detached, not in a negative way. Not that he's become a lot more averse to household life because he's been household for so long. No, he has a very affectionate relationship with his wife and family, but he's become more detached. So if we actually go through the process, we might not understand exactly all the intricacies, all the subtleties of how it works. But if we do it right, it works, and then we're ready for the next stage. We're ready for Vanaprastha. We can think about it, talk about it, and start doing it. Like the husband will spend a little time away from the wife. They'll be together, but the husband will start spending a little time away. And then gradually, more time away, up to the point of the time when one, because of one's development in preaching and renunciation, one can come to the point of taking sannyas, which is what Prabhupada wanted us to do. So this is how it all works theoretically, and this is how it's working in our movement. In many places we see that it's working, and that's it's all to the great credit of Srila Prabhupada for having set things up the way he did. And for those of us who are just beginning or a little bit along the way, if we follow the example of really good senior devotees who have attained success, then we also will be able to follow through the system, even though we didn't start at a very early age, but because of the purifying potency, Lord Chaitanya and the Acharyas, enough purification is there that we can actually follow the system, even though we entered it in a little bit of a different way. We can actually follow the system and come to the point of really understanding how to live within a particular ashram and go from one ashram to the next. So, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu.
If a person's family is all devotees, why would that family be renounced?
Why would the family be renounced, or
why? Yeah, why renounce the family if the family is all devotees?
One is it renouncing the family, but one is doing what's best for the family. If you think of renunciation in that way, the idea is to become detached. In a positive way, to utilize your energy to spread Krishna consciousness. If you maintain your situation, then your energy is not focused sufficiently in terms of preaching. Now, there might be exceptions, but generally, in terms of the way Varnashram Dharma is presented, then this is the best path to take. Or just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I forget the details. He didn't take sannyas, but he became Babaji. Excuse me. Yeah. And he detached himself also. Because in the advanced stage of life, you don't want to have any distractions. And of course, the children are all grown up, so we're not talking about being with. Of course, in Veda culture, yes, everybody remains together. So then there are grandchildren and their children, and it becomes very involving. So the idea is to not limit yourself to a family situation. And then it increases one's ability to focus on renunciation and increases one's ability to spread the glories all over the world. Does that make sense to you?
Maharaj, we've heard it said that the Lord Vishnu is impartial, that he cares as much for the demons as he does for the devotees. Why then would he encourage Indra to take a form that would allow someone else to kill the demons?
Sometimes, yeah, you have to kill demons. Sometimes they're so demoniac they have to be killed. In this day and age, we kill the demoniac mentality. We're not interested in killing demons. But in previous ages, and of course Krishna's always killing, he's killing everybody. Just a question of when it happens and under what circumstances it happens. So, actually out of love, Krishna acts upon us. So it's actually better for the demons to suffer their reactions. And that's why they needed to be killed. So in that sense, Lord Indra was an instrument for Lord Vishnu's affection towards the demons, because they had to be punished. Whatever punishment Krishna gives us, it's always out of love. There's no malice or hatred there. It doesn't exist for Krishna. So if we see it that way. Yes, Lord Vishnu, Krishna is impartial, but he responds to our affection. And he responds to the demoniac activities of the demons as well. So it all depends on us. Okay. And that's why Arjuna was so enthused to fight. He knew he was doing the right thing, even though he had to kill his relatives. He knew everyone would benefit. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.